Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Taylor Thompson, Commodity Marketing Specialist with Kentucky Farm Bureau. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
How's Vicki and David today?
Pretty good.
I'm doing
so
good.
So far, so good. And nobody's told me any different.
That's what I was getting ready to say. We're going to go with it because we haven't been told different.
In this day and age, if somebody don't like it, they'll tell you.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
That is isn't the truth.
Golly.
Everybody's got a voice, it seems like, nowadays.
Yeah, and they want to be heard.
I don't always want to listen to them either for some reason. We won't get into that. But.
No, maybe we should get into that. I don't know. There's a lot of people out there that seem like they want to hold a stake and claim to the all the knowledge or the mm-hmm. correct knowledge, yeah. and that's yeah. not necessarily the case anymore.
Yeah,
that is true.
And people forget sometimes there is something too. If you can't say something nice, just don't say anything.
Boy, that old Vicki, she'll come up with some of the best stuff, Jay. I mean, you can't beat Vicki. She's going to be as nice as anybody it is. You know, when you get out here and talking to people, she's going to be just as nice. And she leaves it to me and you to be
truthful.
Yeah. More or less. She's thinking what we're saying a lot of times, but she just won't say it.
You know, I attempt sometimes to be nice, but Vicki does. You're right.
Yeah.
She I always joke all the time, even between me and you, you know.
Yeah.
Vicki's that glue that kind of brings us together some days. Some days she keeps us apart.
That's right.
It's a necessary part if you're going to be around this bunch very well.
Right.
So. Got a guest with us today, Mr. Taylor Thompson. Good morning, sir.
Morning. How are you all?
Doing the best. Mm-hmm. Glad to have you with us today.
Yeah, really excited. Really excited to join you all. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Start off, just tell a little bit about yourself and where's home for you and kind of how you got involved with agriculture to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you all mentioned, my name's Taylor Thompson. I'm originally from Columbia, Tennessee, so that's about a hour south of Nashville. Grew up, agriculture's been in my family for generations, and so it actually really started with my parents in terms of my personal understanding of agriculture from a young age. My mother was actually the second FFA state president in Tennessee's history back when she was a senior in high school going into her first year of college.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so she was very active with Ag in the Classroom with the Tennessee Farm Bureau.
Yep.
Dad, when I was young, worked for the Tennessee Farm Bureau in a partnership with Tennessee Livestock Producers. And he then went on to work as the director. By the way, my mom's a high school teacher at Spring Hill High School, and Dad went when I was a little bit older, around 11 or 12, to work for the University of Tennessee again, as he did when he first graduated, the Middle Tennessee Research and Education Center, and their farm there, a little over 1,200 acres. And so, from the time I was about 11 or 12 till probably 18, 19, lived there and was able to work on the farm, be around agriculture, and in particular research and extension, you know, and really it was unique in the sense that I was a part of really learning university's role in the land-grant mission as it pertains to agriculture and agriculture's role in the community, to the state, and really to our nation and the world at large. And so getting to work in anything from row crops to primarily beef cattle on the livestock side, when we were there, it was a really unique experience learning on the farm work, but also how to work with people and the importance of education in agriculture, you know, being in the extension front and seeing that. So that's a little bit of kind of my upbringing in agriculture. Yeah.
Well, and we say this, and as David said earlier, we've said it 1,000 times and we'll say it 1,000 more times. But education is something that is important, and you can't say it enough, really. And you being able to grow up in that environment, like you said, growing up on the research farm, there's a lot of people that don't even know what a land-grant university is, let alone understanding the mission and what it takes to be a land-grant university and the research, and that's tremendous for you in your career as you grew up and went to school and now started your career, just having that being your normal. I mean, because that's what you were growing up on that farm, and that's tremendous, in my opinion, of having that understanding and seeing firsthand the importance of the research and why that research is being done.
Well, and to your point, I'll actually speak. It was such a unique opportunity. I'm thankful for. We would be right where we're at in Spring Hill, so. I think for anyone listening to this podcast, we recognize how large Nashville has gotten, especially this area, you know.
Yes.
I mean, Kentucky being just north of it. Well, that really bled south, and on that research farm, you know, we're right there on Nashville Highway, okay, and we were talking a little bit before the podcast with GM being right there. Mm-hmm. Homes have just exploded, and there you have a fully functioning research farm right in the middle. So we would be moving cattle and cars would be flying by, you know. Yeah. And so we'd be moving cattle across the road from one pasture to another. Folks would stop and they would get out and get their phones out and they would record it. People on horseback moving cattle. And for some folks, they had no idea it was right there, and it was a chance to show what agriculture is really about, how we take care of our animals, how we take care of our land, and the importance of it. And to a lot of people, it, right there in Southern Middle Tennessee, you know, I know it's the same in parts here in Kentucky, but would have their phones that they've never seen it before, really. You know, they've never had any interaction, and it's so important to share the message of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Well, and in that area specifically, when you talk about how Nashville has grown, David and I live just north of Nashville, not right off Interstate 24, so we're not very far away. Nashville has grown north, but not like it has south and west, really. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I will ever see construction stop up and down that I-65 corridor in my lifetime, because that's the direction that towns seem to grow. So being a good steward of your animals, being a good steward of your land, is going to kindly be that voice for yourself. For the people who don't get to meet you, they need to be able to see that we do that, and
that's exactly right.
Big urban areas like that don't often get that chance to interface with rural areas.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and you're kind of seeing, I think, a lot of, I know here at the Farm Bureau, but just really ag in general, especially here in America, you see that clash kind of arising between the, you know, between these urban areas that are looking to expand, and then you have, you know, maintaining our rural areas, you know, and part of the puzzle, well, I shouldn't say puzzle, but part of what we, as those who advocate on behalf of rural land ownership, you know, as a part of agriculture as well, is to advocate well and to demonstrate both visually as well as how we speak about things, why it's so important to maintain the rural way of life and the way that we do things in agriculture.
That's exactly right, because we have to have the ground to produce. If we can't continue to produce the food and the fiber for this country and beyond, if we don't have a place to raise it, and it's a real struggle, I know, in a lot of these urban areas, is a struggle between the urban side wanting to expand and the agriculture sector needing to hold on to that ground. Mm-hmm. And it really takes to the person that it wants to hold on to that ground. They've got to have that deep love for agriculture, that part of life. It's got to be in them, because money talks.
You're right.
And sometimes it talks louder than what we want it to, because that is an issue. But on the flip side of that, I know that communities have to grow, and there is a slippery slope sometimes. But we are seeing that. I live in a very rural county, and we don't see that in Webster County. But to say that it won't ever happen, because, you know, we're right in between Henderson and Madisonville, and if either one of them want us, and Hopkins County does expand, they've already expanded down into Hopkins County, which is getting pretty close to Webster County. So
we're heading your way.
You're heading our way. That's right.
And I'll add this, you know, I feel like I've talked about Tennessee enough for a Kentucky podcast, but let me say this. I've been incredibly impressed being here in the state of Kentucky, and to the point of how we advocate our producers in the state. I mean, and this is just an example, and I know, you know, we hear on the news all the time sustainability and regenerative. You hear these catchphrases and these terms being thrown out, but you see how man, just ahead of the curve, how our producers here in the state have been over the years. I mean, people seems like just now are starting to talk about no-till ag, you know, and to our producers here in the state, you know, and these types of practices, you know, that folks are trying, you hear folks talk about it like nobody's ever thought about these ideas before, but our producers have been farming sustainably for decades and are doing the right things, and it's very encouraging, because when it comes to advocacy, especially on the part of Kentucky Farm Bureau, as we're going out and talking, our producers are doing the right things. You know, our folks are ahead of the curve and are always looking for that next edge, right? That next thing that's really going to take their operation to the next level. And that's just been very, very encouraging to see, and getting to work alongside those folks is a privilege for sure.
Good points.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I will say one more thing about Tennessee, which I don't like to talk about Tennessee much. But he is from Columbia, Tennessee, and for folks that are not aware, that is the mule capital of the world in Columbia, Tennessee. So just to point that little tidbit of information, you may have some trivia game you're playing at some point in time, and they want to know where the mule capital of the world is, and that is Columbia, Tennessee.
So. Yeah, it is correct. Hop on 65 South. Once you start seeing mules pop up everywhere, then you know you're getting –
You're getting close.
You see people driving by you with mule stickers on the back of their cars, you know you're in the right area. That's it.
Got one on the front of the ton truck.
There you go.
Nothing in the world wrong with a good mule.
That's right. Not a thing.
For folks traveling through that area, though, don't be confused. It's Murray County, but it's not spelt that way.
That's right.
Yeah. You've probably never heard that through your life, have you?
About to say, yeah, everywhere else but Murray County, it's Maury County. But in Murray County, it's Murray County.
That's how you know when somebody's not from there, right?
Yeah. That's exactly
like,
right.
It's like, well, you're not from here.
That's exactly right.
Tell us a little bit about, if you don't care, how you got to Farm Bureau. Kind of once you left Middle Tennessee, what was your path to get you to the Louisville area?
Yeah, I had a bit of a, I guess, unique in some ways. So actually, when I graduated high school, I played football out in Arkansas at a Division II school. I played there for 2.5 years. I actually had a pretty severe knee injury that took me away from football, and from there I went to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, and that's where I got my undergraduate degree in food and agribusiness. And then from there, after the University of Tennessee, I went and did my master's degree in agriculture economics, and went to Purdue University. And so I'm incredibly thankful to both the University of Tennessee and Purdue. I was able to work with some great faculty there, some of the research that I was involved in at the university level and at the graduate level was particularly involved in consumer perception, as well as consumer perception of products in particular, but also production agriculture as well. So in terms of what we're doing on the farm, and from there, actually, I graduated after Purdue and went to work for the supply chain co-op of Yum Brands here in Louisville. The company's name is Restaurant Supply Chain Solutions, and so when I was there, I worked as the commodity analytics manager there. And so what I was tasked with as a part of the commodity risk management team there was, so if you were to go to Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut, A&W, or Habit Burger Grill, any of the products that are on their menu, we would look to hedge in the markets hedge against any price risk for that raw material. So we'll take, for example, your Taco Bell beef. If you go get a taco, there's a raw material that goes into making that product, and so we would work in the markets to hedge any price risk for those agricultural commodities. So that took form in futures markets. We worked with options as well as over-the-counter products, and so we worked across their brands to secure pricing in agriculture markets. And so from there, I actually stepped away from there. I was just very eager to get back in agriculture. You know, as much as we were involved with agriculture commodities, it wasn't agriculture, right? It was, we were using what agriculture was producing, but for the benefit of a quick service restaurant, and learned a lot there, but was really excited to get back into agriculture. And so this position actually came open, and I applied for it, and now I'm here. Been here for a little over 2 months now. So
I knew that
He's
you
fresh.
I
He's
knew
fresh.
That you had just started not long ago.
Yeah.
I know
I guess right before the annual meeting, I guess, pretty well.
Yes.
When you started. Because I had met him at the annual meeting is where I actually met Taylor. And he and I had a good conversation there and enjoyed meeting him. So excited that he's on the podcast. I think he has a very, very good grip on agriculture and advocacy and the things that he has said already. I think you will find very few young people that have that type of outlook on agriculture, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I was first told that you would be coming on board. You may have started, I don't know for sure, but when the executive team or the leadership team goes around and they visit different counties in the fall, one of those was in Webster County this year, and that's when I was told that you'd be coming on board, and so we was excited. I think that was in early November, so maybe you might have started. You may have already started or about the time you was getting ready to start. Maybe.
I'd have been brand new at that point. Right at the end of October. That was right. That was when I started. So,
and so was excited to hear that you was coming on board, and was excited to meet you and see what. See, watch what you have, things that you're going to do from here on out as you're in this position. And so I think it's, you have a very unique skill, though, I think, because you, with your, when you was talking about your graduate school, you was working with consumer perception, but also in production agriculture. And really, one can't survive without the other. I mean, you've got to have that consumer or that end user. Mm-hmm. You know, and you've got to have the production agriculture, and to have the experience and the education that you have in those two areas particularly, I would think that would set you apart from others, mm-hmm. maybe in ag econ.
I actually was going to ask a very similar question based on what you just said, Vicki. Looking at that term consumer perception, which is kind of what your graduate work was focused on, where are we at today? And I'm going to say in a post-COVID world, because lots of things changed with supply chain disruptions, folks not being able to get things in the grocery store that they looked for. Maybe they're looking more towards local sources for things. But if you were going to grade production agriculture today, you know, today's report card day, where are we at with consumer perception of our abilities?
That's a great question.
Boy, you put him right on the spot.
That's a great question. And really in the ag econ space, especially when it comes to supply chains, this is a question that researchers have been looking at a lot, especially here recently. And I think there's a yearning from the public to be able to purchase what they can see and what they know from people that they know. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is great value in having local markets and folks knowing where their food's coming from. But at the end of the day, I'll also say this, our global supply chain system and how our producers can really produce at a large scale and export our products. And our supply chains are extremely resilient. And so while I am very much on board for our local markets being utilized and folks having a local market, I'm also a huge proponent of our global supply chains and the efficiency at which we produce. And at the end of the day, when it comes to consumers, we love a quality product that tastes really good and is really cheap. And and when it comes to doing that, our global supply chain system does that really well, even in the face of COVID. You know, when we saw that supply chain disruption, we still saw our producers were resilient, our supply chains were resilient, and folks were able to get products to the stores, you know, from a food perspective in particular.
I think you hit a very key point there when you're talking about the resiliency of our global food supply chain. One thing that local or that consumer who's trying to source everything locally needs to know is that everything's not available year round.
Exactly
when we
right.
deal with fresh products, everything's just not there on demand. And that's where I feel like we need to be telling more of the story or providing more education to our consumers in just how strong our global food supply chain really, really is.
And that's a great point. And from my time in at the graduate level, but even working for Yum, Yum's the largest quick service restaurant, largest restaurant brand in the world. And so the business as a whole was a global business. And so when it came to sourcing those products, it was really a unique opportunity to see about how strong our supply chain is from a food standpoint, and it really speaks to you can also see the impact of really the American producer base and how impressive it really is on that global stage, and not only from a grains perspective, so maybe corn or wheat or soybeans, but beef cattle and hogs. It really doesn't stop for the U.S. producer, and it goes into fruits, and it goes into vegetables, and it goes into potatoes. It's incredibly impressive to see what we have here in America, not only here in Kentucky in particular and how impressive our producers are, but U.S. as a whole.
Do you think that our producers are consumer-minded, so to speak? I know that is something that for as long as I can remember talking with producers, particularly livestock producers, because you are, you know, beef producers, because you're selling your product to, you know, to the consumer. It's not a byproduct, so to speak. There are byproducts, but talking about for a long time, talking with producers and making sure that they have that end user in mind. So everything from the way they feed the animal, the genetics behind it, how they handle that animal, or just, and it could be about other things too, but being consumer minded, do you think our producers in general are consumer minded, or do you think we still have a good bit of work on that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I do think that our producers are consumer minded. I do think our producers are aware of their consumer base. I think there's a line that's drawn where, you know, consumers only think so much about producers, and producers only think so much about consumers, and then you kind of got to do what you do on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And so, if I had to speak to that, what I would relay is to say I would encourage our producer base, any chance they get, to talk about what they do. Now, am I saying that every producer does things perfectly, best practices? No. I mean, we all know that there are folks that could certainly improve. But I think for the majority of our folks, take the chance to speak about what you do and why you do it, I think, because for a consumer base that's really looking to learn in a lot of ways, I think they rely on maybe what's talked about the loudest or maybe what they can just hear the most about. But really,
great point.
Yeah, really just our producers talking about what you do, I think goes a long way because as much as, you know, you know, maybe what's out there on X or Facebook or you name it, maybe that people see, you know, your community's going to listen, you know, if you're going out and talking like, hey, here's why I do X, Y, or Z. You know, yeah. I think that's what's important. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to get on those platforms and speak to thousands of people. But if you get a chance, maybe in the grocery store or somebody you know that's curious, speak to them about what you do and why you do it.
Yep. Right.
I think that's a great point. I think we all need to start on that local level and talking to local people about that. And organizations like Farm Bureau that are able to speak on a statewide level and a national level, those are in our commodity groups. All of those folks do a fantastic job, but it all starts at home.
It does.
And we talked about, you know, Farm Bureau being that grassroots organization, and agriculture is that way.
Right.
You know, we need to get on a local level and talk about, if you know, if there's a youth group or a leadership group that wants to come visit your farm, you need to let them do that. And you need to talk to them about just what Taylor's talking about, you know, why you do what you do, you know, you know, those are the, and educate people about agriculture, because chocolate milk doesn't come from a brown cow, you know, all of those kind of things. And we've got to do a better job. We are so far removed. Our population is so far removed from agriculture now than it was even 20 years ago.
Right.
We've got to do a much better job of educating people about agriculture and where their food comes from.
I agree. And I think, too, that we have to tell the things that people can't see. Yeah. Because the general public is only – what they see of your operation is – maybe when they drive by and you're on a tractor, or they in the spring they're seeing you know a planter going across the field, in the fall they're seeing a combine go across the field, they see the cattle out in the field, or they see the hogs out in the field, or the chickens, or whatever. But that is the extent of what they see. Maybe not the chickens in the field, but
or the hogs.
yeah, or the hogs. But anyway, you get my point.
Yeah.
But that's all they see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've got to explain the things that go on behind the scenes. You know, the health programs, what you're doing to make sure that the cattle that's going through the market is healthy cattle that's been handled the right way. You know, I think that's the thing that we have to.
You know, and I think we need to talk about, you know, like those times like last winter when I brought that calf in from where it was freezing rain.
Yes.
And the calf was almost froze to death, and brought it back in, and my wife nursed that thing back to health, and I took that calf back out the next morning at 4 o'clock and put it back with his mama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the things that they don't see and that we don't talk about, that the animal husbandry that we have, we need to talk about that more, and folks need to understand that. And of course, my wife said, we're never selling that heifer, are we? And I said, well, it depends on what she turns out, how she looks when she turns out. So I said, she could be somebody else's heifer on somebody else's farm. She may not make our cut, but, you know, one of those kind of deals. But, yeah, she's pretty well attached. But
those are all good points. I mean, we definitely do have to be telling the good side, as Vicki said, because somebody else is going to be telling the bad side.
That's right.
Yep. Somebody, and like all businesses, there are things, there are misfortunes that we run across that we just soon not happen. You know, we've all lost that animal, and they always happen to be out by the road where everybody can see it. We think about the negative associations, or we hear about the negative associations. We hear about the smell, you know, when you get behind that truck going down the road, or in our part of the country where we still raise a lot of dark tobacco, not everybody enjoys that hardwood smoke smell when they go down the road. A lot of folks fuss about it. So we've got to be going out and promoting and telling those good things, because somebody's going to definitely be telling the negative.
Yeah, and we want to be telling the correct story. I mean, if the one thing about it is, if you don't tell your story, somebody else will tell it for you, and we want to be able to tell the right story and everything. So, Taylor, tell us a little bit about some of the programs and some of the things you are going to be working with Kentucky Farm Bureau.
Yeah, really excited to join with Kentucky Farm Bureau, primarily for what we've been discussing right now, just on that, advocating for agriculture and working with our producers. And so what I hope to bring in particular – coming from a large organization like Yum, and seeing futures markets for these large traded commodities, is I really hope to work in this role in particular, just to help educate those who are interested about some of these markets, you know, why we see prices do what they do, because that, you know, and
if you didn't explain that, son, you need to be somewhere else.
I was actually just talking today, and I was, one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard is that, you know, something along the lines of, if for somebody comes and tells you they know exactly why prices do what they do, then you can guarantee it's the exact opposite. Because if they did, you wouldn't be hearing about them. You know,
that's right.
They'd have their money and they'd be up somewhere. But so I think one thing is kind of when we're thinking about the dynamics of futures markets, who are the market participants? What's some of the information that's available from a public standpoint that we can look to just to give our producers an edge on the farm, you know? And because I think we were talking about this a little bit before the podcast as well, is there's so much information out there, so much. You can get your hands on just about anything, all right? But how do we – it's now we were in a place, I guess pre-internet you could say, where the information was limited, you know. Dad used to tell me he'd wait on the radio, turn the radio up, hear the weather, right? You know, or get the commodity pricing on the radio. Okay, well now we're in a place where you pull up 15 apps and they got anything that you'd want to know. So the next progression, I think, and what I hope to bring or to be a part of, is how can we really package that information, right? How can we can look at data that we have available and take this and that and leave this and that. You know, we don't have to read everything. We don't have to spend 30 minutes, an hour and a half trying to parse through information. You know, how can we package some of this information up and go with it? And so that'll be done through I'll be working doing our economic reporting, our market and economic reporting here, and that'll come in the forms of different reports that we're going to be rolling out. It's going to be we've got some things in the work here in 2024 that we're going to really look for our producers to get them data, get data in front of them, and hopefully work. Okay, how can we start now thinking about from a risk mitigation standpoint, and also from an ag marketing standpoint? You know, how can we take some of this information and start to incorporate it into our operations?
Yeah. Another member benefit that, you know, when we've talked about on previous podcasts, but you know, those are some things that are available, that they're making available, that haven't been available in the past. You know, those are some things that they're making available. You know, and we've said it numerous times, but you know, Farm Bureau Insurance is the insurance part. Farm Bureau Federation is the member benefits part.
Right.
And you don't have to be you don't have to have Farm Bureau Insurance to be a member of Farm Bureau.
Right.
And we encourage people. They are a great advocate for agriculture, and we encourage folks to be members of that organization because they do. They advocate for the folks of us that are in agriculture.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And then, like folks like you work with other partners, ag partners, particularly in ag econ in your area, I'm sure that you'll be working with some of the folks at the University of Kentucky and some of those extension specialists, and working together on some things. And it's great to have you as another resource for our producers and having another perspective. Yep. It's just, you know, everybody's ag story is a little bit different. You have just a little bit different perspective, and that's what I think continues to make us strong in Kentucky, particularly is having all these folks that stand alone, but then also collaborate and work together too. And
yeah. You know, and that's kind of what Taylor does, and kind of what we do in our ag econ folks is we put the information in front of people.
That's right.
To hopefully benefit those people, and they'll make a better decision that affects their bottom line in the long run, that will help them positively.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Taylor is in the same situation that we are. just providing that, just another perspective on that information. So I encourage folks, when some of this stuff starts rolling out, and I'm sure Farm Bureau will be getting that information out to people, but you know, subscribe to that and be able to look at that information and maybe his take on what's happening in the marketplace today.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, I think when we talk about farming, you know, it's something that so many of us cherish, and I think even from an idealistic standpoint, a lot of people in our culture today think of farming as almost something that's mystical or magical, but it's a business at the end of the day, right? There's a bottom line at the end of the day, and we need to be profitable, mm-hmm. and we need to treat it like a business. And so I think that's one area that hopefully, you know, our Arkhamaya division as a whole and myself being a part of that can really provide value from a bottom line standpoint, and hopefully directing into our producers, you know, towards those things that are going to help profitability, right, and help our producers be as well informed as possible and have that information that's going to help them make the best decisions when time comes.
You mentioned your commodity division. We've talked a little bit about grains, but what are some of the other commodities here produced here in Kentucky that you all represent?
Yeah, that's right. So on the we have a very unique commodity division in terms of the scope at which we operate. So we have Donovan Pig on the livestock side of things, and I've had a report that we're going to be turning out here in 2024 is a Kentucky livestock report that we're going to be doing. It's going to be tracking our in-state auctions, so we're going to get an idea of pricing out to our folks here in the state. But Donovan working there, and then Fran is working with our certified farm markets program. So in terms of our farm markets there, which is a really unique program, I think, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier. It's more of these, you know, I'm hesitant to say niche, but some of these maybe smaller markets, but are a little more unique to a regional or local area. You know, her being able to work with those folks to really build them out from a local sense, you know, capitalize on that opportunity that's there from folks that are yearning to be on farm there in their local area. And then, of course, our division director, Renee, overseeing, you know, our group as a whole. So, you know, in terms of what we are a part of, and then, of course, under my umbrella outside of grains, I also work with our tobacco producers and forestry producers as well, those who are in our forestry industry. So we try to get anything that's ag related in Kentucky. You know, we do our best to meet folks where they're at.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Well, you mentioned the other two commodity marketing specialists that are part of your division. One of the things we always do at the end of the show is wrap things up with a timely tip. Vicki and David kind of conspired together to get some of these together for today's show, and they thought, and I fully agree, that one of the things that folks should get out and do is take the time to meet and know your marketing specialist with Kentucky Farm Bureau. Find out that person that's going to be directly involved with marketing and support of the commodity that you produce. Get to know them, therefore get to know some of the programs that they're involved in, and find out ways that they can be a part of your operation.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we're here to help. We're here to serve, you know, our folks, you know, and that's really why we're here. And I know as a team, as a division, we're excited to do that. And that's, you know, that's the best part of our job, is getting to work with our members and our folks out there in the state, our producers in the state. You know, that's one of the highlights of what we do, is just getting out and being able to work with people. It's something that we're really excited about.
Just want to encourage folks to get to know these folks, and we kind of did a little series here of some of their new marketing folks, and so we encourage folks to get out and know them, and you know, kind of subscribe to some of their information so they can make a much better choice and a much better decision to hopefully affect them in a positive way.
That's right.
Sounds good. Well, Taylor, we appreciate you being here with us today, and we want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.
Good job.
Nope.